Hey, welcome to the podcast. We have a really important show coming up on Wednesday. We don't want you to miss. It is Alana Maher exposed. What she has done that is verifiable, and the new information that is coming out of what she may have done as well. There's enough, I believe, for a grand jury to look into this and see whether or not she is a felon. There are some serious accusations. They're hard to understand, but of course, you know, with the little puppets and maybe the chalkboard.
Maybe you're a song or two.
Yeah, a song or two. You're going to be able to understand this. We break it down for you Wednesday at 5, only on Blaze TV. Please subscribe now. You can cancel on Thursday if you know, you're like, well, that was a waste. Mm-hmm. You can cancel on Thursday, but you're going to find a lot of stuff on the Blaze, not just our special. You know, you've got Steven Crowder and everybody else. Make sure you join us.
I don't sign up for things without promo codes.
Promo code Glenn will save you 10% right now at blazetv.com/Glenn.
It's a moral stance, fine.
All right. That's a big one, yeah. Too. It's an important stand. All right. We begin the podcast talking a little bit about what is happening with Iran. Also, a new study on Americans. We also talk about the loudest voice. I had an astonishing thing happen to me. Both Stu and I looked at each other at the same time and went, whoa, wait a minute. We remembered something and have used it as a defense of me several times over the last, 5, 6, 8 years. And we were wrong. We were wrong. We both remembered it incorrectly. An amazing kind of moment. And then I used that to kind of explain what people are actually hearing and what it actually means from Donald Trump. Also, Alexander Hammond on Boris Johnson and his path to prime minister. Then Stu, after I hang up the phone with him, screws it up by telling me all kinds of new information that now I'm even more confused.
You're welcome.
And so much more, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Let's get this nasty snake off of our plate right away. Jason Buttrill is with us. Jason Buttrill is with us now, and he has a look at what has been happening with Iran this weekend. Hey, Jason.
How you doing? Wow. Always at the end of the day on Friday, these things start getting crazy. It's hilarious every time. I still see this as how I've been analyzing this for the past couple weeks now. Iran's not operating from a position of strength. They're operating out of a position of weakness. Mm-hmm. So now they're pushing to see how far they can push, to see if we'll get some kind of overreaction, whether that's we react poorly and then strike something, you know, and escalate the situation militarily. Or they're trying to force us to the negotiating table because sanctions are crippling them. Mm-hmm. The last move before this was they were very public, made a statement and said that we've exceeded our enrichment, production for uranium. Mm-hmm. And then they sat back and watched and waited. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened. We didn't do anything. We didn't go crazy. So they were like, well, crap, basically. What do we do now? So things escalated some more with the drone. They flew a drone nearby. What would we do? You know, well, we shot the drone down. That was really cool, by the way. Marine Corps radar blocking sent that. It was just really, really cool.
Yeah, it wasn't. We didn't shoot it down. We made it crash, basically.
Exactly.
Which is pretty fascinating.
Jammed it, took control of it, and took it down. Really crazy. Yeah. But then, again, on Friday evening, I believe, was these oil tankers. Now, what they're trying to do is, and I think it was a grossly miscalculated move by them, because the geopolitics of oil coming out of the Strait of Hormuz have changed. Now, if this would have happened in the 80s, where a vast majority of our allies and us got a lot of our oil from through the Strait of Hormuz, we might have reacted differently to this. But now we're just not compelled to react if they do pull a move off like this, because the situation has changed. The economics have changed. Where the oil is coming from has changed. A smaller percentage that go to NATO allies, I would say with the exception of Japan, don't really get the majority of their oil from that area anymore. So it's changed. Mm-hmm. So they seize one of these ships. They don't seize one of our ships. They seize a weaker ally in this. I'll be at the UK, but they seize a weaker ally, mm-hmm. and they sit back and wait to happen. Now, I think this was a complete and total lie, as far as, of course, how they said this whole thing went down. But the UK ship said that they were going through the exact channel they're supposed to go through. By the way, it's very hard to steer off that because everything's automated. Mm-hmm. They know exactly where they're supposed to go. Mm-hmm. But they said all of a sudden their attack boat just, you know, started surrounding them. The helicopters came in. The Iranians said that they were acting aggressively and strangely, and then they wouldn't cooperate with them, so they escorted them back to Bandar Abbas, which was total and complete just bull. But then again, nothing will come from this. They're sitting back and waiting to see how we're going to react because they're doing everything they can to get us to the negotiating table. The president has to sit back and literally just check this out. You have to check your allies, make sure that everyone else doesn't respond with too much force. Just sit back and let things play out. We are in a beautiful, beautiful position right here. We are exactly where we were just before the Obama administration let them just ruined it, basically. The Iranian people were in the streets. They were rioting. They were this close to pulling off a regime change on their own. And then we ruined it. And now look at the ramifications. We are exactly in that spot right now.
So are the people beginning? Do you believe the people will begin to rise up again? And can they stand that? Because the crackdown will be quite hard.
It will be quite hard. And it all depends on if they can get their internal security force to switch over, because that's what's keeping them in check right now.
So we say that this is ridiculous, that they have our CIA agents, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think the CIA is necessarily there. It might even, but I wouldn't be surprised if we had somebody there, including special forces. I know people that happened to be on the ground in Poland and other places when the Berlin Wall fell. And their job was to be able to stabilize things, destabilize on the way out, and stabilize on the way in. Do you think that they have 17 of our agents?
No, that's ludicrous. A complete and total lie. The thing is, and if you look at, they're more scared right now of internal problems. The external problems they're not really mad about, or they're not really too concerned about right now. Their external problems being forced that the sanctions are putting on them. But the main focus right now is that force is hurting the people. So, like I said, I think food staple prices have gone up by 80%. Inflation is out of, imagine that, 80%. So getting in milk, getting in, you know, chicken or eggs, all the prices have
80%.
That
higher.
Is insane.
Yeah.
Water is running out. They're having water shortages. Now, you have certain people within their government, within their security services, even IRGC, members in the government, who are being approached by a lot of these street movements. And they're saying, hey, what are you going to do? What do you do? You know, like, what can we do? How can you help us? And then you start seeing some of these people getting accused of espionage by the CIA, which is just ludicrous. They are taking out systematically, one by one, the people that might cause problems for them once this street movement really erupts. That's what's happening with them right now.
So where does it lead? If we stay cool, where does it lead?
So there's some good scenarios and very bad scenarios on that. What I think, because geopolitically, a war does not make sense. They know this and we know this. That's why we're not going to do any kind of invasion, which is just stupid. We're not going to escalate it to a full-on war. If you see troops being moved, 500 troops to Saudi Arabia to support this, that's stupid. 500 troops in Saudi Arabia will do nothing but piss off a lot of jihadis that are already people like Al-Qaeda that are in Saudi Arabia. But that's not going to do anything for Iran. It's purely symbolic. Moving a few F-35s into whatever airbase they went to down there is insignificant. Again, it's not going to do anything. When you see five aircraft carriers start going towards that way, that's significant. But one aircraft carrier there, that's not. Everything is symbolic at this point. So they're not going to go to war. We're not going to do it. I see that either the sanctions will continue to put so much pressure that the people out in the streets will put pressure on the government to actually go back to the table and say, okay, how can we get back to the JCPOA? What are the things you want fixed in it? I can see them at least making that gesture and attempting to go back. Either that could happen, the street movement boils over and forces regime change, or the IRGC, which answers only to the Ayatollah Khomeini, does something very crazy And then everything geopolitically that makes sense goes out the window and something bad happens. That would be an escalation.
Like, what would they do that would cause that? I mean, they're taking tankers. I mean, this seems to me very parallel to the Barbary Pirates. The Barbary Pirates would just take things and the world would put up with it and put up with it and put up with it until Jefferson came and said, look, a quarter of our money, a quarter of the budget is going to pay bribes to the Barbary Pirates. We're not doing this anymore. It's out of hand. We're a long way away from that, but it seems almost like the Barbary Pirates where they're just seizing things. What's the tripwire, do you think?
It's an interesting parallel there. I've also thought it was interesting in studying that the Barbary Pirate Wars, they didn't really touch British ships too much.
Right.
They didn't want to tangle with them.
That's right.
And notice the British didn't really want to help the new U.S. ships that were going through there. Because,
the French.
Right.
Right.
It was the Barbary Pirates were helping them out.
Correct.
I think that this could escalate if the IRGC attacks like a U.S. flagship, actually attacks them, or a U.S. naval ship. It's also interesting that the Houthis in Yemen have they haven't stopped operations against the Saudi forces and the allies that we have there, but almost stopped operations there. The Iraqi militias, the Shia militias in Iraq, have kind of stopped their operations. So either they're not getting money or they don't want to push that hard because they fear that escalation. Something could happen to where, let's say they attack a U.S. base, their special forces, mm-hmm. and some of us die. That will send this over the edge. If they attack one of our naval boats, that will send this over the edge. And again, geopolitically, it does not make sense. So the actual government in Iran, like President Rouhani mm-hmm. and his foreign minister, Zarif, they're saying, don't do that. Do not do that. But the IRGC in Khomeini, they're 12 are Shias. They don't care about an escalation. And that's all part of the global Islamic revolution.
Yeah, and global chaos. Wash the world in blood.
Exactly. And that's another thing that worries me. So that worries me, and containing Israel worries me, because they have a reality on the ground, which is we cannot let them continue to enrich uranium. You guys can sit back and say, hey, that's fine. Go ahead and do it. There'll be a breaking point. But Israel can't make that choice. They can't make that decision. They have to respond. So if I'm Pompeo right now, I'm in the Trump administration, I'm constantly on the phone every single day with Netanyahu saying, calm down. You know, we got this. This is our plan. We back you 100%. We're not going to let it get to that area.
Right.
But don't send. There was just a news article last week that said Netanyahu took 3 F-35s. And this is a leaked report that they wanted to test to see how far they could get to Iran without them detecting it on radar. They said they made it to Tehran and back with 3 F-35s, was never detected. And they said Iran is freaked out right now.
Good.
Good. But good. Israel's the one to watch right now and to calm.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn. And if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Are you watching the Showtime special, The Loudest Voice? Okay. Nobody is watching this, and I think it's because nobody's watching.
Oh, I didn't know the ratings were bad.
Oh, yeah, horrible. Well, I don't know. They were for the first one, I would imagine.
I've kind of enjoyed it.
I actually have, too.
Yeah, I've kind of liked it. Although they don't have everything right, obviously.
I think if they are as right on the sex stuff and the evil stuff, you know, that they're claiming as they are on us, they're about 40% right.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, the ratings went way, way up for at least episode 2.
Oh, really?
Up 600%.
Oh, wow.
So the first one was only 300,000, but they were up over 2 million for the second episode. So it seems like it, for whatever reason, I don't remember if there was something big competing against the debut. I don't remember exactly, but it seems like the ratings have bounced back to respectable levels.
So we're watching it. This is a story about Roger Ailes and Fox. And Roger Ailes that I never, ever saw, sexual predator that I never saw. I don't know. I don't think that it's unlikely that he was like that. But I have no evidence, never saw
it. You never saw anything personal.
Never heard it.
Right.
Never heard it. Roger was a good chameleon. He could be who he needed to be around whoever he was around. He knew how to work a room. But I think they have him pretty nailed, with an exception of they make him seem insidious on all of the things that mm-hmm. he does and says.
And insincere, that he doesn't. It almost seems like he doesn't believe the things that he's saying and doing. He's just doing them for power, or for gain, for ratings, whatever. The spin on it is like Fox was responsible for. Well, for instance, last night, after the Fox and Friends appearance by you, which we need to get into in a minute, but they jump right into the Acorn thing, and there was a little space between those two things,
and it was not coming.
It did not come from Fox.
No.
That was not made up by Fox. That came from James O'Keefe.
It did, and it wasn't. And they're spinning this like everybody took marching orders from Roger, and that he mm-hmm. had some big conspiracy that he was doing. I can tell you. That with an exception that I've heard of, but I have no personal knowledge of, Roger did not control the spin of anyone. You know, I know that Bill
on the
O'Reilly,
air, you mean on
yeah,
Fox,
Bill
yeah.
O'Reilly was yeah. completely independent. I was completely independent. When Roger never walked the halls. You know, if I ever saw him, I saw him in his office, he would call and say, can you come to my office? And there was maybe what, eight times in 2 years, that I saw him. They were always asking for our scripts, in advance. And, you know, a lot of times I would go on the air and I'd go, yeah, turn the prompter off. I'm going to go a different direction. It drove them nuts because they didn't know what I was going to say. They didn't know what I was going to do. And so there was no collusion with Fox at all that I know of with anyone. He was not a puppet master. Mm-mm. Other than directionally saying, we believe these things. We are going for, you know, a conservative, American-loving audience.
Right, like when he said, we believe President Obama is a racist, and you need to say that on Fox and Friends.
Yeah, right.
Remember that whole... it is remarkable, though, watching this special, because, like, and we should play the clip, but, like, the reaction on the show is Glenn goes on Fox and Friends, he says President Obama is a racist, and everybody freaks out. And it's like, what an antiquated time in which cable news personalities saying the president was a racist was at all controversial.
That's for sure.
Now it's required. You have to do it to get on television.
And it
right
makes
now.
The accuser a racist.
Yeah. Yeah. When did that start?
If that was a thing now, every news person in the world would be a racist.
And look at the guys who were against that, at least in the movie from last night, was Roger was for it. Apparently, and
it looked like Brian Lewis was coming unglued.
Brian Lewis, who was just the PR guy, and he's like, look, you can't be fair and balanced and say that the president is a racist. And I thought to myself, look at the left making a movie about this and not even recognizing that they've more than doubled down. They've taken it 1,000-fold. Mm-hmm. They also in this made a huge change, I think. Here is the Showtime version of what happened. Should I play this one first?
Yeah, the Showtime one first.
Showtime version first. And I want you to listen exactly how they put this together. Here's the Showtime version of history.
Welcome back to Fox and Friends, where we have a very special guest.
Someone we're really looking forward to having.
First of all, there was no spooky music. Guest.
Our good friend Glenn Beck is joining us. And here he is.
How are you?
Glenn, so happy to see you. Tell us what's going on.
How are your biceps, Glenn?
Not good. This one's pudding and that one's Jell-O.
Well, because you're going to need them. I hear they're having a beer fest on Thursday night at the White House.
That is unbelievable.
Why?
Why? For a teaching lesson for the working class? Some sort of a... Who needs to learn what here? This president, I think, has exposed himself as a guy over and over and over again who has deep-seated hatred for white people or the white culture.
You can't say he doesn't like white people.
David Axelrod is white. Rahm Emanuel is chief of staff. He's white. 70% of the people he sees every day are white.
I'm not saying he doesn't like white people. I'm saying he has a problem. He has a... This is a guy I believe is racist.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, we say Beck's views do not represent the views of Fox News or News Corp, and then we figure out what the f*** to do with him.
Have you seen his numbers? We should give him more airtime.
That's all the ruckus.
Beck straight up called Obama a racist on Fox and Friends.
Well, he's not wrong.
Jesus Christ, Roger, we can't just say that. Okay, we have to put out a statement. We have to get ahead of this.
Okay, fine. But, you know, but let's just not rise to the occasion when there's no occasion. Just be clear. We're fully committed to Glenn. We're fully committed to his show.
Fair and balanced doesn't mean a whole lot when one of your stars calls the president a racist. Mm. It makes it a little hard to protect the brand.
I'll decide what the brand is. You put out the fires. I'll talk to Glenn.
That's a fascinating quote.
It is.
By Brian Lewis there. Yeah, fair and balanced doesn't mean anything when your hosts call the president a racist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people have completely changed on this issue.
Okay, so now I want to play what just happened. I sat down, and what did I say in the Showtime version?
You said he had a deep-seated hatred for white people, white culture.
And I said, well, no, I'm not saying that.
I'm saying he's a racist.
I want you to listen to the actual clip. If we
Unbelievable.
Have.
Why?
Go ahead.
The original from Fox and Friends.
And it goes a little bit.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Like this.
For a teaching lesson? Some sort of a. Who needs to learn what here? This president, I think, has exposed himself as a guy over and over and over again who has a deep seated hatred for white people or the white culture. I don't know what it is. But you can't sit in a pew with Jeremiah Wright for 20 years and not hear some of that stuff and
context.
Not have it wash over.
Yeah.
What kind of president of the United States immediately jumps on the police, just like what kind of president would ever say, oh, well, yeah, well, he's black. Of course he was breaking into the house. You'd never do that. This guy has a social justice. He is going to set all of the wrongs of the past right.
But listen, you can't say he doesn't like white people. David Axelrod's white. Rahm Emanuel's his chief of staff are white. I think 70% of the people that we see every day are white. Robert Gibbs is white.
I'm not saying that he doesn't like white people. I'm saying he has a problem. This guy is, I believe, a racist.
Wow. I've remembered it incorrectly.
That's amazing. You reversed
That's
it.
That's amazing.
I did too.
Still, they took out all context.
Yeah.
On the Jeremiah Wright
and
thing.
You know, the Jeremiah Wright stuff and the police acted stupidly because they were white stuff. And, you know, the typical white person. I mean, does anybody remember this stuff that he said? That he's a...
She is a typical white person who, she sees somebody on the street that she doesn't know, you know, there's a reaction that's been bred into our experiences.
Okay, we had that. We had that. Typical white person. If you said typical black person, you're automatically a racist.
Mm-hmm.
So he got completely excused from any racist tendency from that. And if you say somebody has something bred into them, that's all racist
stuff. If you were to say typical black person and assign a positive attribute, you would be in trouble. Right? Let alone a negative one that's been bred into them.
Jimmy the Greek.
Yeah.
Ask him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't anymore.
You
have to speak very loudly.
right. But there was context there. There was the police acted stupidly. There was the white people clinging to God and guns and an antipathy toward people who were different than them. Then you got all the Jeremiah Wright stuff. You had the stuff in his book. I mean, there was a ton of context there that led you to wonder whether the guy was a racist or not.
And so the show kind of shows it as Roger being right with you 100%.
Yeah, he walks out of that meeting and he's like, the guy is funny.
Now, when you talked to him, you didn't say, am I fired? Did you?
No, not that I remember. But
because
now
in
I'm,
the Showtime
I'm now
thing,
I'm questioning
they did.
My memory because I had so strongly remembered this that it was the opposite way.
Yeah, they got it right on the Showtime.
I don't know. I all I remember of that, I think, is your face.
Because, after the interview?
Yeah.
Because I knew there was going to be a firestorm.
I came
after.
Back to the office, and you were there, or were you with me?
I was with you at Fox, and okay. We walked back to the office together.
And
then we got to see Stu's reaction after he found out what you
said. I do mm-hmm. remember the walk back now, because you, mm-hmm. I said, that was pretty good. And you were just bone white.
Yeah.
And I said, what? And you said, you called the president a racist. And I said, yeah, but no, it was in context. I mean, look at what it was. And I was trying to sell that because mm-hmm. I really believed that it would be kept in context.
And not so much.
Yeah. And you were like, I don't think that's going to happen, Glenn. And then we walked back. Had you seen it?
I didn't see it. And Pat pulled me aside. Pulled me out of a meeting, I remember. And you're mm-hmm. like, did you know what happened this morning? I'm like, what? And he's like, you know, Glenn called the president a racist. And like, I'm the guy that freaks out over everything.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I remember thinking to myself, wait a minute. Never in American history has someone who called someone else a racist gotten in trouble for being a racist. Right? Like, everyone,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
When you say, hey, that person is racist, that never makes you racist. But in this one instance in American history, it did.
We lucked out. We lucked out.
We lucked out. Wow. Breaking new ground.
Okay. Anyway, that's on Showtime. It's an interesting look. I don't know how accurate it is.
More accurate than our memory, apparently.
Yeah. Well, on that.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
So, what are the things that people heard from Donald Trump? The press will tell you that he is racist because of his stance on the border. He is racist because of what he said in, what was it, South Carolina, right? Was it mm-hmm. North Carolina, South Carolina?
Yeah. Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Right. So are you going back to that?
Yeah, Charlottesville.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, sorry. I was wondering which one you're talking about. I mean, look, they're going to find a different reason to call him racist.
No, I know, but look, give me the big ones. The big ones are the border, because he says horrible things about Mexicans. Charlottesville, because he said some good people on both sides.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
this one was a big one, right? The
Send them back tweets. Send them back.
It's probably the three people would cite most often.
Okay, can I give you three logical reasons why he would say this, picking the wrong words? He's not exactly a wordsmith. He's a guy who shoots from the hip, mm-hmm. and he has no filter. But what the American people heard when he said things like, you know, a lot of them are rapists and drug users. You know, sure, there's some good families in there, but a lot of them wish us ill. How is that racist? Well, because the press and the left want to make sure that you never, ever group anyone together, except if it's their approved group, then you can group them together. So, you know, the LGBTQI2, whatever it is, that group, they put that group together. So that's okay to group people. But you can't say anything about Mexicans without being a racist. Okay. Well, what he was saying was true. Some are this, some are that. And we don't know the difference between the two. What the American people are hearing is, I'm tired of not knowing who's coming in. People taking from our system, taking, you know, advantage of us, you know, clogging our hospitals for free medication or free treatment. They're also clogging our school systems and bogging them down. And you know what? They're changing my community in ways that I don't think are in line with America. That's what they were saying. my city is a sanctuary city. We don't have sanctuaries for people who break the law. And so many people in the government, both left and right, and the media, have just ignored it. And then they started to take the stance of, yeah, well, that's not really a law. And now they're at the point of, welcome them in. We want them to come. Come on in. Come across the border. We want an open border. Come on, come all. Everybody, free health care. So it's gone from something where, look, I've got a concern and nobody's paying attention to it. And here's this guy who isn't real eloquent, who just says what people are thinking. You know, look, some of them are good or some of them are bad. We got to stop it. And because of an agenda, and because the people in the media and the politicians, they don't see things the way the average American does. They don't see it. And so what happens? They immediately go agenda first because they're blind second. They immediately jump to, you're a racist. That only makes it worse for the American people, because the American people who have a real issue with the border, who are not racist, they say, racist? You're even more out of touch than I thought. And they'll accept more language that is maybe shoot from the hip language against the politicians and against the media, because they feel like the media is calling them names and separating themselves. And they're saying, no, I'm other than you. I'm not like you. We're other than you. We're the press. We're the political class. And we kind of look down our nose. That only makes things worse. When he says Charlottesville, I think, and I could be wrong, this is pure conjecture. And I think this comes from Steve Bannon's influence. And Charlottesville is one that is really fascinating to explain if you actually want to understand what may have been in the president's mind. Beyond that, it is what's in the mind of many Americans. It has nothing to do with Nazis.
You're listening to the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Here's Ilhan Omar.
If you're getting people pumped up for the special, you got to get pumped up so they get something running through their heads all week. I mean, that's the issue here. Right, here. Do we have the short version of this? Because I think people need to remember Ilhan what we're Omar dealing with for Wednesday's special.
Yeah, okay.
Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar.
I haven't heard of this.
Okay. All day.
Is that what I promise?
I asked
for something on Friday. Is this what you brought me? Something that's going to drive me out of my mind all week?
Well, there's other things coming for the special.
Okay.
But this one has been, we used to do this on the air all the time.
Yeah, I know.
Omar. Da, 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 da. And it just gets in your head over and over again.
Okay.
Now we have something to go to.
Okay.
Whenever you need it, is there. And I will tell you this.
Thank you.
I promise, because this happened to me. When you hear it once, it'll just get in your head a little bit.
I know. It's already there. Play it again,
okay,
please.
Well, okay. Yeah, it's good idea.
Special on Ilhan Omar on Wednesday. You don't want to miss.
It's a special on who? Is it exactly?
Ilhan Omar.
Who?
Ilhan Omar.
Somebody.
Ilhan Omar.
Oh, that's right.
All right. So the special, you don't want to miss it. On Wednesday, it is going to go through this scandal that I think there is enough evidence here to have a grand jury look at. And it's disturbing. The story is very, very disturbing. It seems to be a long string of felonies.
It's just difficult to really understand without a song that reminds you who it's about. Do we have anything like that? Is there another potential song that would, is there a, let's play that if we have that version again? Because I think people need to remember who this is about.
Oh, no, I thought you were going for something else.
No, what? No, 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 just no. Listen to this, because the name is in there several times.
Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar.
The special is on
Ilhan Omar.
And it's coming up on Wednesday on BlazeTV.com/Glenn. The promo code is Glenn.
Yeah, make sure you sign up for this. This is something that the mainstream media is not covering. And I think they're not covering it for a couple of reasons. One, it's very complex, but that's what we do best with the chalkboard and possibly some Muppets on Ilhan Omar on Wednesday, 5 p.m. Sign up now.
Listening. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast. I have been looking for the real leadership for the world for a very long time. And I don't know, because I don't follow British politics as closely as perhaps I should. But I have read a lot of Boris Johnson's work. I've read his book on Churchill. I have watched him from afar. I think this guy has the charm, the intelligence, and the backbone of a Theresa May, or a Theresa May, God forgive me for that, a Margaret Thatcher or a Winston Churchill, and could become a very effective ally for the United States, especially with Donald Trump. We have Alexander Hammond. He's a contributor for Young Voices at youngvoices.com. He has been watching Boris Johnson and can fill us in on who he is and what he thinks it means for England. Hello, Alexander. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, do I have Boris Johnson right that he is cut from the Margaret Thatcher, Winston Churchill kind of cloth?
Well, yeah, I believe so, especially when we compare him to Theresa May. Theresa May always tried to distance herself from the Thatcherite wing of the Conservative Party, whereas Boris Johnson definitely tends to embrace it more so than she does. Last week, for example, on Wednesday, he said that free market capitalism is the best way to support the neediest and poorest in society. Mm-hmm. And that's currently the core of his campaign. So, yes, I definitely agree with you there.
So explain him to people. He's Oxford educated, very, very bright, but always looks disheveled. Has this attitude, or maybe some say it's an act, that he's always kind of surprised on where he is and who am I supposed to be talking to here. And then he just becomes really eloquent and funny. And people like the disheveled kind of personality that he has. Is that real? Is that an act, a hybrid of the two? And who is he really?
I think it might be a hybrid of the two. He was an old Etonian, so he went to Eton. He then went to Oxford, as you said. In reality, he is a classical scholar. He is a historian, as you mentioned. He wrote the book about Churchill.
Brilliant.
Did
we lose him? Oh, my gosh. We lost him. Call him back. It's Brexit. See, this is what happens when a country starts to say, I'm breaking away from the EU. All of a sudden, their phone service goes away.
Every phone call in the EU has gone fine today.
Yeah, except for this one.
But this one?
From England.
Because of Brexit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about Brexit with him. He was elected. Remember, he was the head of the exit party, or the Brexit party.
Weeks old when he won.
Yeah, right. I know, yeah. Right. He was the face of it. He almost won prime minister at that time, but it fell apart at the last minute. His critics say he doesn't have a plan. He says he has a plan, and that the EU will be leaving. I'm sorry, that England will be leaving the EU by, what is it, October 15th is the deadline. What I like about him is he is, again, plain spoken. He calls balls and strikes. He is from the upper crust, but he reflects the average person in Great Britain, and he understands them and is representing them. And that, I think, is the problem of the political elite. They don't understand, nor do they like the average person. I strangely really believe that. I hope that someday I'm proven wrong on that. But I really believe that the average politician, after they spend times in the halls of power, they grow to despise the average person. And he doesn't. And he also doesn't hate the press. I mean, it was crazy. The press at one point was staked out at his house because he's had a baby with somebody who was working in his office, even though he's married. And he just seems to be able to roll through all of this stuff by going, yep, I did that. And at one point, they were staked out at his house, and they'd been there for like 2 days, and he brings tea out to them at one point and says, look, I'm not going to talk to you guys about anything, but I don't know. I thought maybe a spot of tea. I've really been feeling bad for you fellows out here in the rain. So here's some tea. And I think that's great. I just think it's great.
Yeah, he has an approach that's disarming. It's you know, you compared him to Trump, and a lot of people have made that comparison, and there's totally different styles there.
Totally different.
But there's a real similarity in that both of their opponents can't figure out a way to beat them. You know, there's that way of the same thing with Trump. Like, people would say all these things and they'd be like, any other person would be, you know, on the streets if they said this.
Right.
And he has that sort of
Teflon.
They used to say it about Reagan, which I never really understood with him.
So we're back with Alexander. Are you there, Alexander?
Yes, I am. Sorry, but I have no idea what happened.
Oh, I do. It's you guys want to leave, you know, the EU, and now your phone system's falling apart because, you know. Anyway,
it's a conspiracy.
So tell me what this means. First of all, do you believe he's going to win tomorrow or today?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The recent YouGov poll, which is the biggest polling company in the UK, predicts that 74% of Conservative Party members are going to vote for him. And what we need to remember is the Conservative Party members which are voting. It's not the normal public. It's not the members of Parliament anymore. It's the Conservative Party. So that's 160,000 people who are deciding their next leader.
I do not understand your system. I'm glad we broke away from it. So he's going to be the prime minister. I've read, in fact, the New York Times was blabbing on about it today, that they don't think he actually has a Brexit plan, that he's bluffing. He has no idea what he's going to do. Do you believe that, or do you think he has a plan?
Okay, so the reason I'm probably saying it is because Boris Johnson, unlike Theresa May, is committed to leaving the EU on the 31st of October, which is 101 days away now, with a no deal. Whereas Theresa May, when she was in power, she refused to walk away from EU negotiations with a no deal, which meant that the European Union, you never go into a negotiation saying that you're unwilling to walk away from it. And that's exactly what Theresa May did. So that's why the EU gave the UK such an awful deal, and there was nothing Theresa May could do about it. So Boris is prepared to go in with, and he's willing to walk away with a no-deal Brexit, and that's beneficial because we can start planning for that. And if the EU does want to offer us a better deal than what they already have, we are open to that. But if not, that's fine.
I don't understand. That's how you negotiate. I mean, you don't bluff. And you have to be committed to the end goal and yet open to what somebody else is doing. You know, if you're negotiating with a company and they want you to come to work for them, if you quit your job and say, all right, I'm going to just work with you on a deal and I don't like it, but I'm coming to work for you. You're never going to get a good deal. Never.
Yeah. That's exactly what Theresa May did. So leaving it on the table, the possibility of walking away and opening ourselves up to international markets, he suggested that if a no-deal Brexit does happen, We are, of course, trying to adopt a UK-USA free trade agreement. He's raised the ideas of creating duty-free ports. So that's basically free trading ports across the country, which has the potential to create 150,000 jobs for the UK economy. And we have many other countries in talks of creating free trade agreements. So being able to prepare for a no-deal Brexit means we are able to go to the EU and we are not bound to them for a deal.
So are you? Do you believe he wants to leave or he just wants a really good deal?
So he doesn't want to do a no-deal Brexit. He's saying that as a last resort. But he is also saying that we must leave it on the table to ensure that we can get a good deal. Otherwise, if we're not leaving it on the table, we might as well just have three more years of what we've just had under Theresa May leading us. So he doesn't want to leave with no deal, but he is prepared to, which really differentiates him from Jeremy Hunt, who's the other contender in the leadership contest. And that's why he's likely going to beat Jeremy Hunt, because he is far more committed to Brexit than Jeremy Hunt is.
Can he get it done in 101 days?
Well, that's not a lot of time at all. But luckily, we have been preparing for a no deal for a couple of months now, even under Theresa May, ever since the original Brexit deadline was pushed back. It's a tall order, but we must remember that it's not no-deal Brexit is not just going to be harmful in the short term to the UK economy. It's also going to be very harmful for the EU. There's huge unemployment rates in Spain, in Italy, in Greece. Germany almost was in a recession. We see the yellow vest riots across France. So they definitely need to trade with the UK and be on good terms with them. So it will cost them dearly, too, if we were to leave with a no-deal. And it's not just the UK that will suffer in the short term.
So I want to express something to you that I hope is not happening, but history, you know, sometimes doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I know you're well-versed in history. Without getting into any kind of conspiracy, there was in before World War II a group of I guess you would call them not progressives, but I guess, well, they're socialists that wanted a restructuring of the continent and a lot of the countries. And so they were kind of pushing for it. They were kind of excited about it because they thought the war could happen quickly, be over in just a few months, and you'd have a new world you could divvy up. I've heard from people who in the EU that say there are those who would rather blow the whole thing up, punish Great Britain, even at the expense of Europe, just because they believe it's got to be their way. Do you believe that?
I definitely think there's some people in the EU who want to use Brexit as an example to other states who are thinking of leaving. For example, the Netherlands has quite a large...
Right.
There's a lot of people in the Netherlands who'd like to leave, in Italy as well. So there's definitely some calls to treat as like an example. But if they were to do that, we have to remember the EU is shrinking as a proportion of the world trade. The regulation is becoming ever more extensive and bloated. There are calls for an EU army. So the EU isn't just this one stagnant political move, political union. It is an ever closer union, and that is their goal, an ever closer union. So if Brexit didn't happen now or didn't happen next year, what happens in 5 years' time when the EU suggests, okay, we're going to do an EU army now? That Brexit sentiment's not going to go away. And when we joined the EU in 1974, it was just for a single market, and it was more of a free trade union than a big political entity. And most of the people in the UK were very for that, but because it's turned into this huge political union with overbearing regulations following in the 1990s, that's where the anti-EU sentiment has primarily come from.
All right. So what time do they announce when he's prime minister? Is that tomorrow?
Yeah. So the ballots shut in 1 hour's time, and we'll know by tomorrow. who wins the contest, and then they'll come into power on Wednesday afternoon.
All right. Alexander, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We'll chat again. You know, Boris Johnson was actually born here in the U.S. And apparently, you know, you can still be prime minister over there. Another thing wrong with Great Britain, I'm just saying.
Because they don't get a good birther controversy.
No, they don't.
Nothing. They're
like, he was born in the United States. Yeah, we don't care.
Nah, that's boring.
Yeah.
They got a lot to learn from
us.
So.
Do you understand their system at all? I hate this prime minister thing. Like, they're having another vote for prime minister in Israel now, aren't they? Didn't they just have one?
Oh, yeah.
And they're having another one now?
They couldn't put together a government, so now they're voting again.
What?
Well, and this one with Great Britain, they're like, well, look, you know, May steps down, so it's just the head of the Conservative Party. Conservative Party, you think of it, like if the Republicans had control, right? Mm-hmm. And then Republicans voted on who was the head of their party. And let's say they said it was Donald Trump, and Donald Trump decided he wanted to leave. Then Republicans all had a vote that said, well, do we want Mike Pence or do we want Paul Ryan to run the party? Right? Like, that's basically what happened. But they're saying now, once they pick one, this may very well get the rest of the, you know, if in our example, the rest of Congress to come together and force a new general election. And it's like, wait a minute. So they're going to have this election.
So wait, he may not be able to get what they call a consensus.
He will control the government now. But then if they want to push back against this party, they can say, well, let's have another general election now to see if everybody wants him. And then that could happen.
Oh, dear God.
It's just it's like, guys, schedule your elections a few weeks out. How about that? How about every 4 years, I don't know, Tuesday in November, something like that. Everyone can get together and go vote. We're so worried about our system.
Stupid.
Oh, my gosh.
System.
The parliamentary democracy thing is just.
So, but they can only trigger a vote if he can't cobble together a coalition.
Well, that's
right?
What happened. You're mixing. That's Israel. So Israel with Netanyahu won the vote from everybody, but then tried to put together a coalition government to get above 50% and was unable to do that. So now they have to revote.
Hmm.
But again,
but England can just go and just say, well, he's got a coalition of 60-70%, but we think everybody should vote on him.
Well, if he has that coalition, then he probably will not have that problem.
Okay.
The issue is, though, remember, the coalition was built under Theresa May. So will they all stick with Boris Johnson the same way? There's an argument that the answer to that would be no. If he does something with Brexit that they
I
don't like.
I guess it depends on, he's very popular with conservatives. I wonder how popular he is overall. We hung up the phone too soon. Why didn't you bring this up?
I don't know. It's already confusing enough.
Because now I'd like to know how popular he is with everybody else, because I love the guy.
I think it's funny. He's one of those guys that I think is well-liked, though I don't necessarily think most people want him running the country.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.